This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm joined again by Superintendent Charles Oskey of Johnson County School District. Good morning.
It is. Good morning.
It is. How are you?
Good.
Nice to see you again. So, Charles, you've been down to Cheyenne recently, our legislative session, albeit a short budget session, so it's only 20 days, is in progress, and you and a bunch of other representatives from the school district and also from our school board went down and were really part of a large group of people who gather around these legislative sessions because they attract different different groups, you know, interested in different things. And you're obviously focusing on the education piece. How was your trip?
It was good. Exciting. So since I've been here, this is my third year. We've had an opportunity to kind of make it pretty unique. But yeah, we had three board members attend with us. So Travis, Jan, and Kristen both attended with Connie and I, and we left Saturday. Had an opportunity to stop by KC and watch some games there. And then we got on the road. Roads were great until Wheatland, and then roads were closed. But anyway, we got there safely, got checked in. And then what we've kind of our tradition for us is we've started having just a dinner with Representative Crago. So he comes to the table and we have dinner. We talk about kind of some where the legislation's heading, what his point of view is. So we have some good conversation about, you know, what are the impacts of things, not only just educationally, but sometimes what's happening in Johnson County. So we had an opportunity to debrief with him. Then we went back. And then the next morning, again, with the help of Representative Crago, we met back at the Capitol. At 8 o'clock that morning, actually 7:45 that morning, Sunday morning, and Representative Crago led us into the Capitol. Dr. Brown with the Wyoming School Boards Association joined us, and he actually took us to one of the offices or one of the rooms where we were able to spend about an hour with Dr. Brown and just talk about leadership.
And Dr. Brown is?
So Dr. Brown is currently a member of the Wyoming School Boards Association, but he is also, he's going to be the next WASA executive, so the Wyoming Superintendent Association director. He will start that in July. So Dr. Brown's been here in the state of Wyoming for a long time and is one of the critical leaders. So he took time on Sunday morning to come, and we just did some overall leadership training with him, questions and answers, how we can be more effective, what are some of the things, challenges we have. It was a great opportunity. So again, the board, myself, and Connie is the business manager. Sunday morning from about 8 till a little after 9 o'clock, 9:30, did some what I call professional development, growth opportunities. And then Representative Crago came back in, and we went through all the bills and just where they're at on the floor, what they mean, what they actually don't mean. So that's always engaging when you can actually get one-on-one training from somebody like Representative Crago. So if you don't know Representative Crago, he's good at what he does, and he knows the bills, he knows the people, he spends the time, he just doesn't read the heading, he knows what the bill means, why you support it, don't support it, and then he's asking for feedback. So it was really good to go through that. And then he gave us a tour of the Capitol, and I want to say specifically, we got to go up into the dome, which is a privilege. So got up there, there were probably thousands of names where people had got to sign off that they'd been in the dome. Our board members went to the very top and signed and said the JCSD number one. And so making our mark in the Capitol came out of that. By this time, it's time to go to lunch. So we went to lunch and then we went back to the motel, changed quickly. Everybody was staying at Little America, and the whole purpose is why we call it the Wyoming School Board's Legislative Forum is at 2 o'clock that afternoon. So we arrive about 1:30, 2 o'clock. All the boards from around the state of Wyoming, this is our weekend to get together, and the School Boards Association goes through legislative stuff, which was nice because Barry had kind of just debriefed us a little bit, and then they talked about upcoming. It's more of another training. So for 2 hours, the Board of Trustees went through a training with the School Boards Association along with all other board members. There was about, I think there's between 80 and 100 people there around the state representing different boards and districts. So that was awesome. And then at 4 o'clock, we went into what's called a legislative reception. So School Boards Association invited them to the Wyoming Department of Ed. They invited legislators from all around the state. They come to Little America. And for the next 2 hours, we talked with legislators. And our board members, man, they sat at a table and had a conversation with one of our senators. I don't remember exactly which one it was, but they were engaged. So that's the whole idea. And I was talking with other legislators, talking about, hey, what is our feeling? So it's a great opportunity to not only build relationships in a professional relationships in such a way, but give direct feedback to how maybe some of these things are impacting what we're talking about. Again, some of the main topics were obviously taxes and how that impacts schools. Learning that piece, there were several other bills that were a topic of conversation. But in general, it's really an opportunity to for our legislators, senators, and representatives to hear from our board members. And our board did a great job.
And of course, not many legislators will necessarily be well-versed in education. They may have kids who are going through the education system, but they're not necessarily education professionals. So how was the experience of that interchange this session?
Well, I think it was good because, again, it was like, okay, what do you feel as... Because really, board members are elected officials just like them. So when you have elected officials talking about their impact, because our board represents our community, and, you know, how does it not only impact education, but what are the tax reforms, what are those things? So it's an opportunity to say, hey, this is what the pulse of our community is. This is what we want to do. So, and those representatives that do come, kudos to them, because that's a Sunday night. They don't have to be there. They're coming to listen. So most of them, when they intentionally show up, which they did, were to ask questions and really get feedback. So it's not just come and, hey, it's a feel-good moment. I mean, they're there to make sure they're being heard or they're hearing from other elected officials. So that's what I like about the environment.
So thinking about I'm trying to think of the topics of conversation and how the conversations could have been going. The legislation, and some of it's already fallen by the wayside, but the legislation that the House and the Senate are considering, is, even though it's a budget session, is basically falls into three areas. There's parental rights, where does the boundary between school and parent begin and end? Then there's a certain amount of concern about guns and guns in school and safety, etc. And then always funding. Can you describe a little bit about how those conversations were in those three areas?
So I think a lot of it was around, first of all, we need to keep the ECA in. There's conversations on how important that is.
ECA?
External cost adjustment. With the cost of everything going up, that's part of what was there.
But so also, that basically means just keeping step with cost
inflation. But it's not keeping up. It's actually behind. It's not much of an ECA, but we're not gonna say, hey, we're not gonna look a gift horse in the mouth. We're gonna say thank you, and then that's what most everybody was doing. The other part that I think is a critical bill that a lot of people had that discussion, and I think it hopefully just goes through, is that taking off the sunset for that 30% carryover, which is huge. It was put in place for ESSER funds, and that 30% carryover doesn't mean you're carrying 30% cash over. It means just our prepaid bills and some other things that allows the district to function within those months, which is June, July, and August, when there are no revenues, major revenues coming in from the state. So it kind of allows the district to plan to have enough money to function, and that 30% actually gives you probably 60 to 75 days of operating expenses if your revenue flows, which is kind of what we're, kind of that deficit. So those are some conversations about
funding. So that's really just a mechanism to allow the system to run more smoothly. It's not about increasing.
Absolutely. We are not increasing or requesting more funding. It's that adaptation to the processes in place so that we can maintain our current budget expenditures. It's that revenue flow piece. So that was a good conversation. Capital construction, I know, is a hot topic. If you've watched that school capital, it's been very heated. And that's going to impact Johnson County. We need to, as a state, decide on a consistent revenue flow to keep our buildings up and maintained and not have to do a hit and miss. Oh, this year we're going to do it, next year we're not. We need to get into that process where we have a plan, a process, and how we put things on, and because that's where we're at as a district. And that's one of the things that I struggle with is we've done all this work to get some of our high dollar projects. We have $20 million worth of projects into a component, onto a component list to get approved by the state for funding. And these aren't wants, these are needs. So we've foreseen the future. We have a very short window to start upgrading some of these so that we can make sure our buildings stay open. When you talk about HVAC and when you talk about just safety and security things, those are huge, and roofs that aren't leaking. So I'm hoping that what we're doing, we're kind of a model district. So then when legislators or the process ask, why are you asking for this? We have evidence. This is why we need to do it, because we want to maintain our buildings for the next, 40 to 50 years, in addition to where we are. And we have beautiful facilities, but if we don't maintain them, they'll get to the point where we can't afford to fix them. So this is real critical that we continue that. So that's one process that I kind of looking at that we need to kind of keep an eye on, because no matter, even though we're not scheduled to build a school or we're not at the top of the list of the component projects, if they don't start getting a solid resource and a solid process in place for schools, that's going to be a difficult, there's going to be some difficult decisions on how we keep our buildings up if we don't get that addressed.
So funding, obviously, a big issue, and that's still in play. A lot of mm-hmm. that is still in play.
There was 140 amendments, which is a record to the budget. So that kind of paints the atmosphere of what's happening between the House and the Senate. So when you have that many budget or amendments to a budget, and you have to come back, there was a committee that worked months and took everything into consideration for this budget. So when it comes out and it votes on both sides into the second reading, you have 140 amendments. There's a lot of discontent, I guess would be say that there's not a trust in the process of why we're doing what we're doing. So that was an interesting, for me, that was an interesting culture to watch.
And the House has been probably more contentious than it's ever been.
Yes.
In its debates across a broad range of topics this yeah. session. So looking at the other two areas, what was the conversation between educators and school board members, who are obviously representing educators and students, and legislators about gun control?
That was an interesting topic. So I'm going to just say my professional belief, okay? It's scary to me that we're having this conversation. It was moving so quickly. I firmly believe that the communities and the districts that need to be able to have the ability to control, say yes or no to this, and not a state mandated, this is what you're going to do. It's kind of scary to me not to put rails around it and what that looks like. We are, nobody, my frustration is people don't recognize the fact is we as a district spend a lot of money and time. We have trainings, but we also we're working on our doors, our security doors, our locks, our cameras. We spend a lot of money, and that's some of the things that people forget is we are already trying to keep our buildings for our kids as safe as we can between hours. The things we don't control is the things outside of the school day. So just to push and say, hey, guns can go anywhere in any government entity is a scary piece. I don't want to speak for other entities, but I want to speak for schools, and I think that should be a decision left by the board and the community of what that looks within their individual schools. Because I know there's districts that do it, but I also know details behind that too. So it does cost money. It's not a simple thing, and more importantly, we have to weigh what is the safety factor of either way. So I really think it needs to come down to a board and a community decision, and not have the state just mandate something.
And I think this is a good time to point out that just next month, the third active shooter training will be back here in Johnson County, going through all the schools, all the staff, and so on. So, and I will be doing a separate piece about that too.
So that's exciting. So can I take a side
yes.
trail on that? So it's not, I'm not going to consider it a training. I'm actually going to consider it an evaluation. So TAC 1 is coming back in. There's going to be some training, but we're not evacuating schools. We're not doing some things, but they're going to come back and evaluate the things that we've been trained on. Are we doing them, and are we doing them well, and what do we need to grow on? So it's going to be more of an evaluation of what, it's kind of one of those things. You train. Well, now I'm asking them to come back and evaluate us on the things you trained us on. Are we doing them correctly or not doing them correctly? Because I don't want it to be a checkbox that says, hey, we did it, but what are we doing to follow up with it? And then we're going to do Friday with local law enforcement. We're going to do situational trainings at one of our schools. So it's not just us as a district. It's a combination with local law enforcement and us kind of going through some scenarios and practicing. I think the very unfortunate and sad situation that happened in a neighboring county just a little bit ago is a reality that this isn't big city stuff. This happens right here in Wyoming, and it's real close by. So just I never want this to happen, but I never want to be able to say that we didn't at least look at and evaluate what we have in place to make sure staff and students can be safe.
So going back to the conversations that were happening with legislators, where do you think, what was the discourse? Were legislators, did you change the conversation or their minds, or did they change your mind about what it came to?
I can't say either one changed either minds, but they were definitely open to the hearing. And it was for me, with the legislators I visited with, was interesting to hear their perception, right? Their perception, in most cases, it's already happening. We're just making it legal. Okay, well, that scares me. But that's their perception. And then so then you would come back.
So they were saying people are already taking guns onto school properties and
Into government meetings and all that kind of stuff.
And so we're just going to make it open. And
yeah, so again, that was a perspective, whether it's reality or two different things. So that's what I love about open communication. You get their perspective, you give theirs. There's been a couple times, oh, that's not right, we need to change it. But for the most part, they say, hey, thank you, that was great information, I'm going to process it. So whether that changed their vote or not, but the fact is they listened to us, I think, is critical. And maybe somewhere down the road, we live in this world of influencers, right? Every day there's somebody on social media being an influencer. That's part of the process. So I wouldn't say we made a lot of changes, but I do believe we made people think.
So do you go and talk to Johnson County School District staff on a fairly regular basis and find out what the collective opinion or what the different opinions are within staff are about carrying guns, having guns in the classroom, allowing for those things? Does that factor into your conversations?
If it comes back to, we're going to decide, that's when we go to there. I'm just making these conversations based on what I know as a superintendent and what does it take to implement that. But if the Board of Trustees and this community ever does that, then absolutely we will be in front of the board. We'll be in front of everybody with real data and not my personal decisions.
So moving back to the third and final tranche, parental rights of sort of, and I think it's an interesting conversation generally, not just legislatively, because you don't send a student to school in isolation. They come in a context of being a whole person. They're not just an academic face sitting at a desk learning and, you know, trying to become graduated. There does seem to be a lot of conversation around where parental rights should begin and end when it comes to school district. How are the conversations on that topic?
No, I honestly, that was a topic that was brought to me by legislators, because that wasn't something that really came up in the amount of time I was there. And I can't speak for the board that sat at the table, but for the most part, we have requirements to make sure we protect kids and those rights of parents and falling within that. I think if there's that initiative that we're talking about, what we're teaching in school is, if you were able to see Dr. Miller's presentation at our last board meeting, is really truly being as transparent as we can with our curriculum and how it aligns. And that's why we're doing PLC, professional learning community alignment with curriculum, so that as we get this out to the community, so parents actually know what we're doing, I think it's going to eliminate some of that. You know, between FERPA, we have a responsibility to protect student data, what goes out, what we can tell and who we can tell. So a lot of some of those things, you know, we already protect kids, but and we can't tell everybody everything, but the stuff that we can, we're going to try to be as transparent as we can.
Some of the questions have been really over whether kids can be influenced during a school day in a way which is at odds with how their parents would like them to be influenced. Is that something that comes up in Johnson County?
Oh, I get those occasional questions, yes. So influencing can happen at any point or any time. It doesn't necessarily have to be in school, but our job is to teach kids according to the standards, and we need to stay out of the politics and beliefs of systems. So we're actually, you know, we have a responsibility to prepare kids, let's be honest, with a state assessment, okay? But staying out of that influence of personal beliefs or whether we submit our personal, but we should not be doing that. Our job is to instruct and guide and sometimes counsel kids, be listeners, support kids. But that's always, there's some gray area in there, whether you reference that as teaching or influencing.
And so do you feel that we've sort of got it about right here in Johnson County, or is there still more work to do?
There's absolutely more work to do, but I think we're trying to be as open and as transparent as we can. We don't have it, but we're working on getting it. You know, I really feel we need to improve our communication plan with our community. So things like we're doing here, I know I talk with you regularly. I have meetings with the newspaper, and we're trying to be out. The things we're doing with student leadership at BHS, I think, are awesome. The fact is we post our board meetings are live. I mean, we're doing more than most districts are, but I still think we can do a better job.
And is there a defined policy of how or a protocol? I mean, if a parent, for example, has a question mark or an issue that they want raised, is there, you know...
Absolutely. Start with your teachers, then start with the building leadership and move right up through that. I mean, those are the policy, but it's just protocol too. I mean, if there's a concern, bring it to your teacher, bring it to your building leadership, and then you kind of follow up through that chain of command. So,
and so you had a good visit in Cheyenne. You obviously feel that it was worth the effort.
Oh, so we're not even finished with Sunday yet. So I'll be back on the journey.
Sorry, I'm moving you along.
So the next part of this is a collaboration between districts, and next year we might even invite the other districts down on Saturday too. But then afterwards we went to dinner with Sheridan 1, Sheridan 2, Johnson, and then we had Representative Crago and Western that joined us. And we had a very engaging dinner and talking about differences in the districts and state law. I mean, it was good. I mean, it was a quiet environment at the Little America that we sat down. It was Johnson County School District number 1's opportunity to host this, and very impressed with the conversations that came out of the table about different topics. You know, and there was a lot about taxes. I mean, that's the big concern. How do we reduce our taxes? And then the side note is what's that impact on school funding? What's best for our communities? What's best for those that are retired on a fixed income? I mean, it wasn't just about schools need more money. If you'd heard the conversations at the table among state leadership and your school board members that went down and represented, they were representing us in both Sheridan County and Johnson County about their concerns for their communities, which was good conversation. And it lasted probably almost 2.5 hours. So we sat, we collaborated, we had a good conversation, we were grateful for it. And then we went back to our rooms, exhausted. And then we got up. Charles wanted to leave at 5, but we left at 7. We went back to the Capitol. We were at the Capitol at 7:30. We divided and conquered. The board members went to a House committee meeting, which I think Representative Crago was there. It lasted longer. There was supposed to be some conversation about the concealed carry, but it never got to that. And Connie and I went to the Senate, where I testified on the one bill about 165 days. And my concerns with reducing the number of days is I don't want legislators saying then teachers need to be paid less. That's if the purpose is the
so
bill.
So what was the proposal that they were considering?
So the proposal is to go from 175 days of educational time and to 165 and reduce PD by 5 days. So it's only 5 instead of 10 required days.
PD being professional development.
Professional development, yes. Thank you always for correcting me. I love this. but in that world, I agree with their theory is, you know, the social emotional piece and finding a way to you know, give teachers some time to be able to do things and families. I get the theory, but I'm just very concerned. So there's two things I brought up when I testified. I said, does this impact the number of required hours instructional contact time we're supposed to have? Because you're reducing the days, but you're still keeping the same number of required contact hours. People don't get that. They just look at days. And they said, no, you still have to teach so many contact hours within that window. And then I said, okay, so here's what I'm afraid of, because I appreciate the bill. I appreciate what you're doing. But I can't have in 2 years when we go to recalibration in 2025, people coming back and saying, now teachers only teach 165 days, so they need to get paid less. Okay, that's another jab to the teaching profession. So we got to look at that effect. If we're doing this the right way, then that can't be a conversation that we shouldn't be paying teachers more, we should be paying them less. So I was just very transparent, just because I know I've been a part of this process since I started as a superintendent in 2013. It sounds good now, but what's that impact going to look like when we come back to that? What's that funding aspect of it? So it was good. They reassured us that's what the bill was about, and just had other conversations outside of that. My other big concern is this, is when we reduce days, yeah, it's great for our certified staff, but that means we're taking 15 paid days away from our classified staff. So I have some concerns with that. And the comments that come back, well, the board and the district can choose to stay outside those windows. And
so could you give me an example of what a classified staff member would be, what would be their role as opposed to?
Paras lose 15 days. Kitchen staff, because these are days that are not open. So, I mean, when they think about these things, I have to think about that as a superintendent. So not really in favor of that, because if it does pass, we're going to come back and write that alternative schedule to stay outside those days, those parameters, which they're granting everybody. So really, in my mind, what they did is they reversed the role. Any districts that want to do an alternative calendar like New West and KC kind of fall, they're within the model. And then all the other schools in the state of Wyoming are going to have to apply for an alternative schedule, because it does impact the length of Christmas, the length of spring break. It just squeezes everything down. And you have to stay within that statute. So people don't realize that means your spring breaks will be much smaller. Your Christmas breaks will be very limited. So
they're already pretty short.
Okay, well, this will shorten it up even more unless you apply for an alternative calendar, which districts all have the right to do. Okay, so just you have to look at the big picture. And some people call that Charles's curse, because he looks at the big picture sometimes. But there's always a ripple effect when you make things. So with that, the more we can do to support teachers and understand that and recognize their work is hard, but sometimes when we make something that sounds good, there's always a ripple effect, so that's why we need to ask the details.
So before we finish up and staying on this theme of big picture, is there conversation happening within the education sector in Wyoming about how to attract new teachers and how to keep teachers in the profession and engaged and feeling a sense of purpose and fulfillment as they teach our children?
I believe there's always been that conversation, but for me to say the needle's moving on actually how to come up with a solution is not moving very fast. And if you want to be real, it has to come back to there's a cost to anything that you do, and if you want quality teachers in the state of Wyoming, we're going to have to compete with salaries and benefits.
And do you have a sense that Wyoming is already losing out to other states?
Absolutely. We used to be the premier state where people would come to, and now other states have upped their ante, and now we're just becoming kind of average. So, and then when you compete with average salaries, we are not competing with the youngsters, because they like the social life. They like the cities that have, you know, more opportunities for them to do. So rural schools and rural communities are going to be impacted when you become just average. Saying it's a good salary, but when you compare to others, you know, we are losing. A great example was used as actually the parent was very upset that their child took a job in a local state for less money because of the social environment, because they were going to live in a city with more opportunities for them as a young person. And that was like theater, movies, you know, that engagement piece. So that's what we're competing with. Love Johnson County, love Buffalo, Wyoming, but the attraction, unless you like the outdoors and where it's located, doesn't contain, in some cases, a lot of young people attractions. And I think we try to do a pretty good job of that. But with that, that's only the beginning of that day. So then we went to our committee meetings, and then we got recognized at the House and the Senate, which is pretty cool. We had an opportunity to watch both sides and how they operate. And then I had an opportunity with Representative Crago to meet with Matt from the Legislative Service Office and potentially request an interim study this summer with the Joint Education to change some policies or procedures, both, on how school revenue comes in that's impacting us, because there are some rules that need to change so that we're not in the same pickle again next year. So that was exciting. It was a super good meeting. It lasted about an hour. So with Representative Crago's support, we might get that stuff pushed through to do some meetings this summer. Then we loaded up, we drove back, got home, everybody was exhausted, and we started the next day. So that was the journey, and it was time well spent. And I honestly will sum it up by saying our leaders, our board members are great representatives of Johnson County. And I want to say the time we spent with Representative Crago was truly truly eye-opening with what he has to do and how he represents this community, which is awesome. And again, huge thanks to Dr. Brown and Brian Farmer and the School Boards Association for putting it on. So,
well, thank you for explaining the exchange of ideas, information, conversation, and giving us an overview of what happened for you guys in Wyoming, in the Wyoming legislative session.
I didn't mean to get so excited and talk so long, but anyway, it's good.
It's always good. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.